Blog Talk Radio.
Records of reggae coming through my bedroom wall. Power party up next door, but I'm sitting here all alone. Show. My name is Emelina, my partner in crime, as usual, Fuzzy Biscuit. I had to play that for the return of one of my favorite wrestlers this weekend at All Out. Yes, Ruby Soho, a.k.a. Ruby Riott, also happens to be CM Punk's favorite band, Rancid. I'm pretty stoked about this weekend, man. Let's start with Ruby Soho, actually, because I think that's going to be opening up the pay-per-view at All Out. That's going to be the pre-match. It's going to be the Casino Royale, the battle royal in which the winner gets a title shot, if I'm not mistaken. I didn't even know AEW had 21 women on the roster. But there's going to be 21 women in this battle royal. It is suspected that out of the eight wild cards, Ruby Riott slash her new name now, Ruby Soho, named after one of the great Rancid songs. If you're into punk music, one of the great Rancid songs, Ruby Soho. It was kind of cool watching that unfold on Lars' podcast, if you will, watching her marking out as a punk band that her favorite punk band is going to bequeath, you know, one of their iconic songs to her. I'm curious what you think. Usually with these types of things, you usually go with the wild card. We're going to jump right into the preview. Usually you go with the wild card. Ruby Riott might be one of the wild cards. The Iconics are out there as free agents. What do you make of this battle royale? Here's how I'm going to say I predict going to win the whole thing. If I'm booking. And you know I hate fantasy booking. I had Jade Cargo winning this whole thing because she's in the tournament. Yes, over Ruby Riott, Ruby Soho, and the Iconics and anyone else on that roster. Even though she's green. She's very green. But what do you? I know usually you pick wild card, which is a cop-out. But whatever. I'm not going to judge you to it. But that's the way wrestling works sometimes. So what do you think of this battle royal? Like I said, I didn't know there were 21 women on the roster.
I mean, I'm surprised you thought I'd go with a wild card, especially with who you pick. who do you think I'm picking?
I think you're going to pick Sheeta.
No.
So are you going with Jade on this?
You should know I'm picking Jade Cargill. That's why I'm like, you really think I'm picking a wild card when Jade Cargill's in it?
I mean, when the
wild
card
they gotta do something with her. I'm not saying give her the strap. You know what I mean? Like it could very well end in, you know, her losing her title shot, which is fine. But they gotta do something with her.
This is a big opportunity to put her over. Like they obviously think very highly of her. I mean, it's obvious she's also very green, but I like how they're slowly bringing her along, putting her in the ring with someone like Red Velvet and then putting her in the ring with someone like Kira Hogan. But I do agree with you. This is an opportunity for her to show out and not necessarily win. I think she's going to win the whole thing. It just feels like the time is right to kind of strap the rocket on her, even though she's green. Now,
she's green,
how that works
but
out.
She's been around too long. You know, I agree that she's green, but I mean, you know, she's been around long enough without doing anything. So it's at the point where it's like, okay, you know, she definitely has a look. She definitely has, like, athleticism and strength. You know, other stuff you assume will come, you got to do something. Like I said, you don't have to put the strap on her yet, but it's time to move forward. Like, she's just kind of been bullshitting. You know, they need to... You know, not knocking like Red Velvet or Kira Hogan, but like, you know, this is a possible face of the women's division wrestler. Like, you know, you got to get her in the ring with she's going to stay green until she wrestles, you know, the top people. So I think this is a great opportunity to let her name ring and then give her, you know, a step up in competition and you hope she responds to it. But, I mean, you know,
she oozes
she's getting
charisma.
Old. She's been, you know, she's been like the new girl for so long. And, you know, let's go ahead with it. And, you know, I think that's a logical way to do it. Give her the battle royale.
She,
the title shot.
Do you put her over Ruby Riott, who's the veteran, who is actually still at the peak of her career, who's pretty good, who did not fit the WWE mold? You know, they like a Mandy Rose hot in WWE.
Yeah,
she definitely does not fit
that mold. I put her over Ruby Riott, and this is why. Because Ruby Riott is going to create her own buzz, and she's just stepping in. And her just being there is going to be enough of a springboard for her.
Okay. That's fair.
I don't think Ruby needs the victory in the Battle Royal to get, you know, her push started. Like, her name's already there. People know her. You know, they're excited about it. She's going to get a pop, you know, and then she'll get a big pop when she shows up on, you know, whichever TV show she's on next.
And again, she's getting the rub from one of the most, like, iconic punk bands of all time. Like, however, I don't know how many people are into punk music, or I wouldn't even call them pop punk, because Rancid is not pop punk. I think they're that bridge between pop punk and punk. They're more street cred.
Well,
I think Green Day fit.
Do you know Operation Ivy?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I mean, most of them came from Operation Ivy, which was like ska and punk. So I think that's why people think they're a little bit more poppy, because Operation Ivy was ska and punk mixed. So I think because ska is like catchy, you know what I mean? So some people might confuse it for pop when it's punk rock, you know, mixing with it. So I think that's where they get that from Rancid, because I guess they still do have like a little bit of a ska influence.
It's funny because like one of the biggest pop punk bands was No Doubt, like to ever just blow up. I mean, people talk about Green Day, but like Gwen Stefani came from out of that whole ska scene too. It's a weird, weird segment of music, because it really takes a lot of like dubstep and reggae and mixes it with that punk scene. I like it. Like Sublime, I always fuck with Sublime, but I wouldn't call myself the biggest mark either.
See, but any purist of punk music is already upset at you for mentioning No Doubt and Sublime.
Part of the pop punk scene, and pop punk is driven.
I feel like they're punk influence. I don't think it's fair to the genre to say No Doubt and Sublime are punk. Like
I've seen the biggest pop punk band is
Green Day. I don't disagree with you there. No Doubt and Sublime. I'm not saying that they weren't bigger than Green Day, but I consider them punk influence. I don't consider them punk.
I would say Green Day's the most important pop punk band. Especially performing at Woodstock in '94.
They're the best,
too. Probably.
I mean, like, I'm not a fan of their, like, later stuff that, you know, was, like, ridiculously popular and, you know, made them all their money. But, you know, their older stuff, like Green Day, like, they have two classic, like, melodic punk albums. And that's a pretty big genre. You know, you've got a lot of bands that play melodic punk.
Are you including Dookie in that? Because, like... Are you including Dookie in that? Because a lot of the old school heads.
No.
I didn't think so.
Dookie's like where they jumped the shark to me. Dookie had a couple joints, but like that's kind of where they jumped the track, jumped the shark. I'd say Kerplunk, and I always mix up the name of this. Let me look it up on my iPad, my iPhone, iMusic. It's a long album name that I always mess up. Let me see. It's 1,039, and let me get the rest of it. 1,039 smoothed out flappy hours.
Okay.
That's my favorite Green Day album, and then Kerplunk. But I consider both of those classic melodic punk albums.
It's weird how Dookie's kind of like the Black Album in the metal scene, like. A lot of people consider that's when Metallica jumped the shark, even though that's when they kind of hit a new stratosphere of fame and stardom with Metallica, like with Enter the Sandman and Nothing Else Matters. But like the hardcore Metallica fan is like, oh, and I'm kind of the same way. Master of Puppets is my favorite album of theirs.
Ride the Lightning.
What's that? Ride the Lightning. Master of Puppets, to me, Master of Puppets is my favorite Metallica album. Killmonger's good. Killmonger's really good. But Master of Puppets, it's got kind of like the mainstream appeal of the Black Album with that of Kill 'Em All, that edginess, that garage sound of Kill 'Em All. I just look, and you can't say enough about And Justice for All. Like, that's also a great album. Like, but we're digressing into a music podcast here. Let's get into Metallica like that. Oh, I do. Well, metal's more my speed than see. I always fall back to you on punk because that's more your scene. I'm more metal. And to me, like, the holy trinity of metal is Metallica, Judas Priest, and Black Sabbath. Black Sabbath invented the genre. Judas Priest gave it its look, the black and the leather, and Metallica made heavy metal mainstream as fuck.
The best metal band ever, Slayer.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. But they opened, without Metallica, that opened the door for Slayer. Like, because it just made thrash metal cool without any radio play, by the way.
When it comes to metal, Slayer is the only one that I really, really fuck with. That's it. Like, I just, Slayer to me, nobody comes close to fucking with Slayer, so I don't listen to anybody else.
No Lamb of God for you.
No, man. I'm telling you, Slayer is just... I'm surprised more people who aren't into metal aren't into Slayer. Like, Slayer is just that good musically. They don't have any type of crossover audience except me.
Well, I mean, part of it is the themes, the quote-unquote satanic themes, which, again, it's about scaring you. It's not that they're Satanists. It's about scaring you, like, same way a scary movie like Candyman is trying to scare you. I think that's part of it too is that I think Slayer's best years were those Def Jam years. Surprise to everyone, surprise to all. Def Jam had a metal band in there. You know, they had Run DMC and they had Public Enemy, but they also had Slayer. And I think their best run was those three albums, South of Heaven, Raining Blood. I'm blanking on the other one. But I think that's why I think they don't get as much love, whereas musically and maybe commercially, Metallica just had better tracks. I think that's a combination of both things.
I don't think musically, I think commercially.
Yeah, commercially,
and Slayer's
too fast.
A lot of people, the speed turns them off.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the themes and the speed, if you've ever been to a Slayer show, which I believe you have, it's that wall of sound behind the drummer.
It's like you're listening to the CD. Like, they play it so tight. Like, it's crazy. Like, Slayer's just, they're just that good.
I do feel you're kind of lowballing Metallica a little bit because I've seen them live quite a few times, and their craftsmanship is mwah, chef's kiss. However you feel about Metallica, old stuff, new stuff, whatever, I think their musicianship, as much shit, as shitty of a person as Lars can be, he's an insanely good drummer. I think Slayer's drummer is better, personally, but, I mean, the chops on that guy, too, so, on Lars, so. Anyway, let's move on to All Out, because I can talk heavy metal music all day. I can talk punk music all day, to be honest. See what Ruby Soho did? See what Ruby Soho did? Let's get into the other big return. I'm a stan. I'm not a fan. I'm a mega stan. To the point that I once at a job sat Indian style at a conference table, on the conference table in the middle of an editor's meeting, and told the owner of the company what I thought about his company. That's how much of an inspiration CM Punk has been to me. I've done my own pipe bomb speeches Indian style on a conference table. I have witnesses. I'm not saying that to brag because I was looking to get fired, but maybe I am saying it to brag. Fuck it. I'll own it. Against Darby Allin. How do you feel about this matchup? I know you're a big Darby Allin fan. I'm interested why this was a choice. I know CM Punk is all about working with new talent and putting new talent over. I don't see CM Punk losing, by the way, in Chicago. That's just not happening. If CM Punk loses, we riot.
I mean, I can't see him losing either. I think it's two things. I think he, like what you touched on, wanting to work with young talent, I think he legitimately believes in Darby Allin. So I think he's, like, doing it kind of as a favor to Darby Allin, for one. But I think matchup-wise, it makes sense.
Okay.
If you want, I mean, I know you don't want to hear this, but it's in question the form CM Punk is going to be in ring.
That's fair. No, that's very valid. Absolutely fair and valid.
And
it's a fair criticism.
And I'll tell you what, like in AEW right now, there's not many people that can put other people over as well as Darby Allin.
Oh, look at how he put Ethan Page over this. Even in victories over Ethan Page in that coffin match. Again, one of my favorite matches this year.
Oh, that match was incredible. It was a great match. But, yeah.
And I usually hate coffin matches.
I think it makes sense, matchup-wise. I'm not as big a CM Punk fan as you. So, no doubt I'm watching his comeback match. But I'm legitimately excited about it. If he were coming back and, you know, wrestling, I don't know, Evil Uno, you know, I'm not knocking Evil Uno, but I'm not, you know, it just popped in my head. But I'm just going to be excited about Punk's back rather than the match, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, now I'm excited about the match, too.
Yeah, this is – here's my question. Do you main event this, or do you have Kenny Omega and Christian, which we'll get to in a second? Do you have Punk in the
main event? I'd have Punk and Darby finish the show. But I'd bill it a double main event. Yep, but I'd bill it a double main event. It's CM Punk, it's Chicago. I feel like AEW, like, this is like a huge battle that they've won. You know?
Do you?
Show off your skills.
Yeah.
Like, show off your kill. Like, I feel like I would have Punk close the show.
Do you feel like this puts AEW at a next level? Here's what I mean. It just seemed like there was a concerted campaign by the other company of saying he doesn't move the needle. And there's been criticism of that in the past from CM Punk critics. He doesn't move the needle. He's good but not great. He's not Hogan or Cena or The Rock. He's not Stone Cold. He's not this. He's not. We're always hearing what he's not. But you look, he had grown men weeping in the stands. Let me repeat that again. He had grown men weeping in the stands. The last time I saw that at a wrestling event was Shawn Michaels versus Ric Flair. He had grown men weeping in the stands. The merch crashed the pro wrestling, shout out to pro wrestling tees, but the website crashed trying to get his merch. Do you think it's not Brock Lesnar, which we'll get to SummerSlam in a second, where Brock Lesnar he shits a million pay-per-view buys. We'll separate Punk from Brock Lesnar because he's a different business anomaly. Does this put AEW at a next level?
So, generally speaking, I'd say yes, but I would say, like, clarify it. Like, here's why I say that is because Punk, I feel like, are we going to a next level if, like, we have the same fans for the most part, and it's just that the actual, like, excitement and the fact that, like, an iconic guy who was very anti the competition has finally showed up? I mean, yeah, for sure. I just feel like, you know, Punk's fans are Punk's fans, and I think it's going to draw some Punk fans in that weren't watching AEW and definitely weren't going to watch WWE. If you're like a true, like, CM Punk fan, then you're like, you know, fuck WWE and you're not going to watch it. But I think there's some that probably weren't watching AEW. So the viewership is definitely going to rise. but I don't know if you're talking next level, like all of a sudden, you know, WWE's out of business. And, you know, it definitely
is a huge victory.
It's definitely a huge victory, but, I mean, to what level do you mean, you know, next level?
I said this, shout out to the Starting Five and Dan Dinkins for having me on their podcast for the invite. Really, really, truly appreciate helping us put us over. But as I said on their podcast, it's hard to say WWE's failing when they're shitting $2 billion in TV rights. So
right.
There's only so much failing in that. I don't see AEW sinking WWE anytime in the near future. I don't speak pragmatic and realistic, but I'm talking about next level as being WCW.
Like not considering WWE. Not considering WWE, like not basing it on WWE. Just like they have moved up and improved their situation, regardless of what WWE does. Absolutely.
Yes. I think they move ahead of Impact royally, big time, lapped them. I think they moved ahead of Ring of Honor. They moved ahead of New Japan that right now is having some real issues with COVID as far as how it's being handled in Japan, as well as audiences, as well as getting talent in and out because as they were making this global push to the point where Will Ospreay is now working in the U.S. as we saw in Resurgence. He's now exclusive to the U.S. It looks like Jay White too, by the way. But we'll talk about that some other time. So I'm not saying put WWE out of competition. I don't think you can put WWE competition. But I'm saying being a genuine number two that's not based in Japan or not the ebbs and flows of Impact and Ring of Honor. Like a legit number two on par with what we saw with Ted Turner, his $1 billion. You know, obviously the cons are very loaded. They own Jacksonville Jaguars. They own Fulham. They own a lot of digital properties.
Yeah.
So I think it does put them next level.
I think it brings them neck and neck. It brings them neck and neck with what WCW did, the height of their, you know, run. I'd say it brings them to that level.
And don't forget, there's still, besides Ruby Soho waiting in the wing, there's still Daniel Bryan yet to make his debut. And we don't know where Bray's going. So I do think it puts them on that level of WCW from a couple of years ago. I don't know if we're going to get "quote unquote a war." Obviously, we benefit as fans because I haven't been this excited about wrestling in a long, long time. And judge away that 20-year gap where it was WWE or bust. Look, I'm glad there is an alternative for a Ruby Soho to go to. I'm glad there is an alternative for CM Punk to go to. This is all good for business. So you know. I don't know. I like the moves that AEW is making, which segues into the next bout that I want to talk about, Kenny Omega versus Christian. We were just talking off the grid. I am amazed how I went from, wow, this is such a bad match for All Out. Why the fuck are we doing this? Why aren't they giving this to Hangman Page? Why are they delaying this Hangman Page thing so long? To having Kenny Omega defend the Impact title against Christian at the pilot show for Rampage. It was a shocker to me when I saw Christian win the Impact title. I thought it was a great way to get the belt. It was something that we've discussed here. How do you get the belt off of Omega and onto another TNA talent or Impact talent? Obviously, Christian has roots. He learned how to main event at Impact. Like, he was always going to be Marty Jannetty to Edge, Shawn Michaels, so he went to Impact and showed he can be the face of a company. So I absolutely enjoyed that match. It was one of my matches of the year. It's in my list of matches of the year, Kenny Omega versus Christian for the Impact title. And I'm fascinated now with this matchup where I don't think they're going to get the belt off Kenny Omega, the AEW belt off of Kenny Omega. This isn't title versus title. It's just for the AEW title. I'm curious what you think, going from teasing us with Adam Page versus Kenny Omega to where we at now with Christian. Because this is all related to open forbidden doors that are now open. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I think I feel similar. The match kind of like snuck up on me. Like, you know, I've never been, I don't think it's too many times I've been that excited about a Christian match. I think you're right. He's definitely like lived in Edge's shadow. You know, I think he always will, but the background, the history, and the match where Cage, you know, took the Impact title, like all just, it was, I feel like they built it up beautifully. They did a great job building it up. And now, yes, people like us who may not have been interested before because of them bringing up the history. And, you know, this last time they meet was a top-notch match. And, you know, with a belt change. And, you know, again, now I'm interested too. And even though I would put Punk as the send-off, I think this is a quality main event. I think if you had told me 3-4 weeks ago, I probably would be like, oh Lord, you know what I mean? But like,
yeah,
they did it right. You know, I think they really did it right.
Do,
and I think
AEW's
other thing is I feel like they kind of do a better job of like building up and weaving stories and stuff. Like WWE creative is, you know, they're at like an all-time low right now.
I was about to ask you, who's done a better job being pushed, Christian or Edge, since their returns? Surprise returns, by the way.
I mean, I think probably Christian, I would almost say. He won a
Edge's
belt, right?
Edge has the bigger push. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Edge has had the bigger push and the bigger eyeballs. Christian, I think, has had a more successful run. It just feels
but
better.
Edge is where he used to be, and I would argue that Christian is more popular than he's ever been and getting more attention than he has. So, I mean, why I say, you know, like Edge is just back where he was. You know, Christian is actually, you know, he's definitely improved his situation. He's at a late career surge.
I'll even go worse than that. Edge, when he left champion. He took his belt off because of an injury. So he's not back where he was. Whereas Christian is now elevated to a position where he wasn't before. Absolutely. To a point where, when was the last time you ever said, wow, Christian was involved in a match of the year type of match? To me, the last time I said that was the ladder matches, the ladder wars that he had
with the Dudleys
and the Hardy Boys. Yeah. So this is him on his own, and really a very slow build-up to it. Because when he debuted it was like, eh, okay. Because he did the Royal Rumble, got that big pop, then he shows up in AEW, and it was almost like, eh, okay. And now, like I said, he's pulled off a match of the year type of banger, and I'm really genuinely like, this is a solid main event if it were to be the last match of the night. So I you know, to build on what you were saying about Christian having the better push right now, I mean, I think the results speak for themselves in that sense, that he's having a better resurgence than Edge, which I feel like people are still iffy about. Let's go through the other matches, and then we'll talk really quick about SummerSlam and NXT. Dr. Britt Baker versus Chris Statlander. I really like Statlander, but not here, not now. This ain't her time. I think we can agree on that, no? By the way, how fucking great has... You remember a year ago we were complaining, oh, God, Britt Baker's on TV. They're going to give her a mic. You remember that? I remember that. I remember being that asshole. And now I can't wait to see her on the mic. I know you were critical of the AEW division, the women's division, but I think as she has improved, so has the division.
That's fair.
The other match,
I'll
let you lead on this.
Division, but, you know, it's better. It's definitely better.
Okay. I'll let you lead on this one. Young Bucks versus Lucha Brothers in a cage.
Man. I'll tell you. This match is either going to be one for the ages or it's going to be murdered by its expectations. Because, I mean, here's the thing. First off, it could be one for the ages because it's Young Bucks and it's Lucha Brothers. And it could be murdered by the expectations because everybody's expecting one for the ages because it's Young Bucks and the Lucha Brothers. So they have to put on a show. But the thing is, if you have to put on a show, like, fuck the cage. Like, Lucha Brothers, Young Bucks, like, especially the Young Bucks have, like, got their swag back now. Like, I mean, this is one of those matches that may, you know, end up being like, this is what tag team wrestling should be. This is incredible, legendary tag team.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this one.
But at the same time, it's a gift and a curse. That could be the curse. And they could put on an incredible show, but to some people, they're expecting the world. And I think there's a reasonable expectation. That's how good these two teams are. Like, it's fair to expect the world.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I'm very excited about this match. It could be very spot heavy for some because of who's involved, but I think that's okay. I'm okay with spot heavy matches. I expect the Bucks to keep. I thought Jurassic Express won that tournament. I thought that would have been the time to put the belts on them. Maybe it's the time to put the belts on the Lucha Brothers. Have them be AAA and, I mean, yeah, AAA champions, tag team champions, and AEW champions, kind of like Kenny Omega's doing right now. Maybe this is the time. Bucks have held that for a while. Bucks have held that title for a while. Match I don't care about, so I'm just going to bypass. QT Marshall versus The Big Show. I'm still calling him The Big Show.
Match of the night.
I don't care. Why is it on pay-per-view? Why is it Casino Royale on the pre-show?
Why are you hating on QT?
QT sucks. QT should be on Dark and Rampage. QT should, at most, he should top out at Rampage. Fuck that guy. Ugh.
All right, fuck it. I don't mind skipping it either. What's next?
Miro versus Eddie Kingston, because we're running out of time, so we have to speak through this a little bit. Miro versus Eddie Kingston. By the way, how great has Miro's fucking promos have been? There's only two things he fears the most, his double-jointed wife and his God. Holy shit, has he been great as a Redeemer.
Oh, I mean, he went from a guy who had Lana as a mouthpiece to doing his own promos and being way over with his promos. I mean, he's definitely stepped his game up, too. And I mean, I know that's your boy, but if you ask me, like, if this match is even much of a match, that's a discredit to Miro. Like, Miro should squash him.
I hate saying it. I hope Eddie Kingston fights in Timberland. Yo, I heard this during the LOX, during the Lock Stiff Set battle. I saw somebody tweet this out. Nobody loves the Five Boroughs more than a dude from Yonkers. That's Eddie Kingston and DMX in a nutshell and the whole Rough Riders. They love the Five Boroughs more than the Five Boroughs love themselves. I swear to God, Yonker cats love the Five Boroughs. I digress. And they're more like Bronx dudes. Like, you ever hung out with a dude from Yonkers, like a real thugged out cat from Yonkers? It's just an extension of the
from Yonkers.
That's Eddie Kingston, though.
I hope
Eddie Kingston shows up in Tim's. I hope when he taps out with his Tim's on. Goes out like a true Yonkers cat. So, Pac versus El Idolo has been a little bit of a polarizing match. Some people say they haven't been happy with Pac on AEW. I think he's been pretty good. He had pretty good matches against Kenny Omega. Andrade, people fear he's nailing it in compared to his days in NXT and as La Sombra. I think this kid. This is one of those matches you kind of nailed it with the Lucha Brothers and in the Young Bucks, it's going to get crushed under the weight of its expectations. I think people are expecting Neville versus Andrade from NXT, and we're not going to get that. Which is weird saying that because AEW fans hate WWE. But I think everyone's expecting Neville versus Ídolo Andrade, and we're not going to get that. I don't know what we're going to get. I think Pac wins, by the way. Which I don't know what that does with Andrade's push, but I think Pac wins.
Does Andrade really have a push in AEW, though?
I don't know what they're doing with him.
I can't say Andrade really is in the middle of the push.
It seems that they're trying to push him. I don't know where it's going.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's tough to say.
We don't know where it's going. I'd say not a good push, if a push at all.
Yeah. Who do you got in there? Who do you got winning? I got Pac winning.
I mean, I don't know. Flip a coin. I'll say Andrade just for sake of argument. But, I mean, it could be either. Who knows?
Next match is Chris Jericho versus
Weird Case.
Yeah, they are. Ever since Pac's push kind of devolved during the pandemic when he was stuck in England. And like I said, Andrade, I don't know what to make of his current. Even with Triple H, he jobs to Kenny Omega. Like, I don't know what to make of his quote-unquote resurgence now that he's out of the WWE bubble. He's in a weird place, and he shouldn't be because he's a big star internationally. It's just weird. But, I mean, this is the guy that created Los Ingobernables. Look what that did for Naito. Look what that did for Rush in Ring of Honor. Hope he feels better. He had emergency surgery on his knee. Apparently, he got his knee injured. Rush feel better. But, it's weird what's going on with Andrade of late. Let's round this out with two more matches. Chris Jericho versus MJF, hopefully for the last time. If Jericho loses, he has to retire from AEW ring, obviously with Forbidden Doors. And MJF could conceivably beat Jericho, and Jericho will still be at Wrestle Kingdom next January 4th. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I got to think Jericho's going to win.
So do I.
I don't think he's leaving AEW just yet.
Last match, I don't think he's leaving. I don't think he would be leaving AEW, but I think he would be competing for, like, New Japan and maybe Impact or something. I don't see that either.
He's still the guy who basically made AEW. Like, I think AEW owes him, and he should be finishing his career with AEW and then, you know, having a job doing something. Like, I don't see him at this point in his career going to, like, Impact or New Japan.
And lastly, this was supposed to be Jon Moxley versus Tanahashi for the U.S. IWGP title. IWGP calls an audible and says, fuck that. We're going to use Tanahashi for the two-night Grand Slam show pay-per-view coming out also this weekend. One of the main events is Shingo Takagi versus Evil for the IWGP title. But what the other main event is Ibushi versus Tanahashi for the U.S. title, which screws Jon Moxley. And he gets, look, no disrespect to Takahashi Kojima. Kojima is one of the all-time greats in Japan. Nobody knows who the fuck he is here in the United States. Obviously, he's here to job to Mox. I think that's fair to say. Kojima's a legend. I'm not trying to disrespect him. Anyone that's into Japanese wrestling knows his accolades, both in All Japan and New Japan. Triple Crown winner, New Japan former champion, I believe a New Japan former tag team champion. But he's here to job to Mox. I think that's fair to say.
I mean, this situation also to me is kind of hard to figure out. I don't know, but I probably would just have to, like, and when it's currently in New Japan, I kind of just have to go with what you're saying at this point. But I definitely can't really figure it all out. I don't know. I mean, I was excited thinking that this was going to be a top guy in AEW against a top guy in, you know, New Japan, and, you know, on
that was the intention.
American pay-per-view, you know, hasn't happened in a long time. You know, so I don't know. Now I'm just kind of like, well, I don't know what happened. I thought maybe he got hurt or something, but now it makes less sense.
No, they're using him to push the importance of the, they're using him for a pay-per-view in Japan instead. Yep. They said they'd rather put him with Ibushi, which, hey, by the way, Ibushi versus Tanahashi is a better match on paper than Tanahashi versus Moxley, but that's just me.
Oh, it is. It is, but it's not about, like, best match, really. It's about, you know, putting on for, like, the top guys in two different promotions in two different countries. You know what I mean? That's kind of bigger than the quality of the match.
That's fair enough. I completely agree. I can't disagree with you there. Because we're running out of time, we only got about 3 minutes. I will say the one swerve I'm expecting, I am expecting Jay White to show up at this pay-per-view at All Out. I'm expecting Jay White to attack somebody, whether it's Kenny Omega or whether it's CM Punk or whether it's Moxley. I do expect to see Jay White at this pay-per-view. That's my swerve. That's what I'm going with. Really quick, because we got 3 minutes, what did you think of SummerSlam NXT? Highlights and lowlights, and we'll close out with that.
SummerSlam highlights. I'd say Rollins Edge. I thought that was a really, really good match. It exceeded my expectations. You know, I'm pretty tough on Edge. The Bianca thing was absolutely horrible. Never should have happened. It was trash. They should have never even been trying to do anything the magnitude of Punk coming back. You can't compete with that. So they did something stupid. It was real stupid. NXT, 2 years in a row, Walter and Dragunov, match of the year. Overall, solid pay-per-view, but good Lord, that match. They've done it twice now. Ridiculous.
I will say about Dragunov, Walter, I felt bad for Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, Samoa Joe, and Karrion Kross. They had to follow that, and they just couldn't. Like, it was just such a drop-off in the show. And it had nothing to do with the talent of the four guys we just discussed. It was just, that's how good of a match Dragunov versus Walter was, to the point that it really, really overshadowed most of the show. That probably should have been your main event. You should have probably closed with that. SummerSlam, agreed on. I agree with you. Two moves that were made out of desperation of CM Punk, of for a guy that, you know, for a whole week of trying to smear the guy of saying he doesn't move the needle, they sure brought out Becky Lynch really quick out of her paternity leave. And they brought in, they gave a lot of, look, Brock Lesnar doesn't get off the couch unless you give him a signing bonus of $8 million or better. I'm not just saying that and throwing an arbitrary number. It's just that he always has UFC as an option. He always has WWE as an option. Again, the guy shits a million pay-per-views. We're talking Mayweather numbers. We're talking Canelo numbers. I hate saying this, but we're talking Jake Paul numbers. I guess he's now a needle mover as far as pay-per-views. I hate saying that. You know, it's Conor numbers. That's the air that Brock Lesnar breathes. And I think it's the only guy that somewhat overshadows CM Punk. I just think that there's a segment of wrestling fans that hate Brock Lesnar too much to give him that respect. But I felt that SummerSlam is a
gone. Punk's been gone much longer, and Punk is beyond wrestling. His personality and promos and all that. Like, Brock doesn't have that aspect of a career like Punk has, and he didn't have the anticipation that Punk did.
Absolutely. Although Brock was a UFC champion and Punk was not. But anyway,
yeah,
no, we got to go on that note.
No, I'm just talking about the wrestling world.
But yeah, we got to go on that note. Yeah, I did enjoy it. But we will talk more details All Out next week and go into further more wrestling news. We'll just do it again next week. Peace.
Late.